Welcome to Carnivore Theology, a podcast that covers hot topics, current events, and answers your questions to help you grow from milk to meat into wise, skilled, world-changing followers of Jesus Christ. Here's Dr. Chad Graham, Pastor Al Desjardins, and your host, Steve Bastian.
All right. Anyways, there's Chad, there's Al, I'm Steve, and we're going to be talking about divorce today.
And Steve's an expert on this, having gone through it 17 times.
I know. It's awesome. It's weird to have that many kids in that many provinces.
Yes.
It's not quite
he's,
true.
He's not even sure what to answer. Anyway, that's going to go around the interwebs now.
Fake news, I say. Fake news.
Yes. He's going to be up for some sort of position at his church, and they're going to say, well, I heard.
I can barely handle my one wife.
You ought not handle women.
No. She can barely put up with me. How's that?
There you go. That's better. That's right.
Actually, in all seriousness, wouldn't polygamy be awful because you would have to deal with so many different interpersonal relationship issues?
And you know the other thing that would be awful is that my understanding is if you get the same amount of a bunch of women in the same in area, they eventually their cycles are like sync.
Yeah, so I'm not even. I'm not.
Can,
no, I
can you imagine?
No, no, no. We're not going there.
Nope. Sing. PMS is a thing.
Al knows a little too much about this polygamy thing.
I'm not saying I haven't given it thought. I'm just saying that to me, being surrounded by a governance of, or a, what do they call it? A parliament of women? What's a group of women called? A parliament?
A gaggle?
A gaggle of women that are all on their cycle would be bad.
An all-powerful force is what I call them.
That's right.
Right, okay. On the edited version, we're going to have to cut this entire start out.
Al's got his job cut out for him. Hey, Al, you want to do some updates?
You know what? I thought we haven't talked to people in a little while, so let's talk about what's going on in our life just quick. And because it's really important that people, they want to know, you know, that because there's one thing I've learned in the last while here, it's that people really do care about us, about me specifically, and about what's going on in our lives. And so just to give them a quick update, I'll do this in alphabetical order. So Steve can go last. And
reverse alphabetical order. Okay. Oh, we're going by first name.
Yeah.
Alberto!
Chad's always in the middle then.
Right. Oh, stuck right, in the so middle
life,
with you.
My life has been exponentially difficult and growing more difficult over the last couple of months. My wife's been in the hospital, and it's been really hard. She's had some medication issues that have caused some real problems with us. And so we thought she was better, and then she wasn't. We thought she was better, and then she wasn't. And so it's been a long, arduous journey that doesn't seem to have much of an ending right now. But at the same time, we have a plan. So if you're going to pray for us, pray that for me, I'm getting lonely and I'm sad. And pray for my wife, who is for her continued recovery. Pray for my kids, that this would be a time of personal growth for them and also a time where they'll see God in action. And our church has been awesome. And we're just so thankful for having such an amazing church that's taking good care. They've been cooking for me for the last, 7 weeks. Like, it's been incredible. So that's my life right now. Shadow.
I built shelves in my garage yesterday. They look really nice.
You put pictures on Facebook.
Yes.
Speaking of faces, hold on. What happened to yours?
He fell in the lawnmower, obviously.
Honestly.
I was sanding.
Did you use your beard?
I was sanding some of the. No, I was sanding some of the plywood I was working on, and it kind of got away from me.
Honestly, you look awful.
Awful handsome, I know.
No.
Fix it. Fix it immediately.
You look like Justin Bieber.
What do your children think of this change?
I refuse to answer on the grounds that my children might agree with you.
The democratic vote is in among all who love you.
This is not a democracy.
What does your wife say?
That's right.
Oh.
See?
It's not a democracy, look, obviously.
I think that we shouldn't. Let's move on. I think we need to hear what's going on in Steve's
what
life.
Peer there's probably pressure some drove you to this madness. Are you? Is it like some kind of reverse Nazarite vow that you've taken?
Pretty much, yeah.
Are you only drinking wine?
I have to touch only dead people. Drink that's only right wine. It's hard on the living, but you know. Have you ever had one of those days where you've got your razor out and you think to yourself, I'm pretty confident there's a 3/4 inch guard on this. And then You don't really look at it.
We know exactly where it's going. This is Chad.
It's like 6 in the morning. You got your eye. And you go, I look all nice today. Oh, that doesn't look all nice. So, anyhow, Steve, all what's right. going on with you?
Yeah.
Not a lot. I've been really busy with work and...
Beard looks good.
Actually, I just took 2 inches off again. Like, the last 2 months, I've taken 2 inches off each month. So it is getting slowly shorter, but it's, yeah. But every time I cut, there's more gray in there. If you look closely, you can see, like, you know, there's actually gray hairs.
We need to send you into a shop and get your, do one cut where your beard is perfectly cultured. So you have, like, no long, like, everything's just exactly, get it all combed up nice.
That would cost money.
Well, just once. And then get yourself, like, a nice button-up checkered shirt, and then you can be a lumbersexual.
You first.
I didn't realize there was a gender identity for that. All right, that's
wow.
cool.
Wow, I did go cool. in there. Okay, so that's the update.
And some skinny right. jeans, of course.
Mostly, we just ask you to be praying for Al and his family. That's so important and so heavy on all of our hearts. So,
well, you know what, guys? I love hanging out with you guys, but we have to get into this really depressing topic.
This topic. Well, I want to thank
you. Why, everyone. Though? Yeah.
Why? I want to thank
you. Why? Let's say we did.
So, guys, the Gospel Coalition, a little while ago, collected some information about divorce rates. And I sent you the link a little bit earlier. I don't know if you had a chance to look at it. But
Yep.
Nope.
So, if you're a nominal Protestant, your divorce rate actually goes up above the average.
Really?
If you're a conservative Protestant, so, you know, a little bit more churchy-going, a little more conservative, it goes down by 10%. And if you're an active conservative, like going to church and protesting, you know, bad things, it goes down by 35%. So that means something. But then you look at Catholics. A normal Catholic, average Catholic, it goes down by 18% compared to the normal population. Active Catholic goes down by 31% less. If you're Jewish, now this is really crazy. If you call yourself Jewish, it goes up by 39%. If you're nominal Jewish, it goes up by 53% above average. But if you're an active Jew, it goes down by 97%.
Wow.
So I'm looking at that, and it seems like the more conservative or more active you are in your church, more faith, more practice, your divorce rate goes down, which means something.
CBC did a little poll a while back, 2010, and the average Canadian percentage is 38%. It's not 50% like everybody says. It's 38%. And most people, here's the problem, is that most people are likely to live together before marriage. Mm-hmm. So it skews the marriage statistic because people aren't getting married.
Yeah, it's not going to common law relationships.
When you look at the statistics for common law relationships, the breakup rate is actually way higher. Like it's because obviously you're not committed. Shanti Feldhen, who is a Christian author, she did this other study, and I can't remember who it was commissioned by, but she said it's about 33% for Christians, so it's less for Christians, and all the statistics that Steve just gave show basically the answer is, or the thing is, the more committed you are to God, the more committed you are to expressing your faith, the stronger your marriage will be, and the less chance you have of divorce. That's what the statistics say. However... that doesn't mean we don't see a ton of divorces in our church.
Yeah, that's a question I had for you guys. Have either of you dealt with a couple in your church that were getting divorced? It can be just a simple yes or no. We don't need any details, but...
Yeah, yes, of course.
Well, you know what? Is that I think the reason this was spawned is because there was someone who actually asked us, you know, like, we have a lot of people in our church that are getting divorced, and then I'm experiencing...
Yeah, the lot in that question concerns me.
You know, well, that's it, is that, so what do I do with all these people around me that call themselves Christians, but are seeking divorce, talking about divorce, have been divorced, are on multiple marriages, you know, how do I react to this? And the truth is that, in short answer for me is, yeah, I've seen a lot of divorce in our churches, a lot of single women that come in that are divorced. A lot of, I've even seen pastors cheat on their spouses. Like I've just tons. Chad, what about you?
I'm gonna go with Steve's original question to say yes.
Yeah,
because we weren't supposed to elaborate.
It's up to you. I was giving you the easy out, and Chad took the easy out.
No, it's to my mind though, it is an unfortunate reality, but I have seen the difference. I've seen in our culture a pretty high priority rate on marriage. And I've seen in our church there's a pretty high reality rate on marriage. But divorce still seems to be just about everywhere. So even though you've got a nuclear family that seems good here, maybe an aunt or an uncle, or if you're in a workplace, all of us are impacted by it. I think that's the way I'd look at it.
Maybe it's like that thing where, you know, if you buy a red car, suddenly you see red cars everywhere. If your wife gets pregnant, suddenly all the girls you see around you are pregnant. Like, it's just, your perspective changes when you get impacted by that truth.
Can I jump in here, guys? Yeah. So we do have is actually a listener question.
Okay.
I try to sum it down, but the question is, in a church where we see a couple going down that divorce path or separated or thinking about divorce, as fellow Christians in that body of Christ, what can we do? What is our biblical responsibility? How can we help?
Mm.
And I think basically they want to know from some pastors, from you guys, what are some of the things that we can do as fellow people in that same body of Christ?
Yeah, before I'll let Al kind of get into the first answer to this, but before I do, I just want to set one thing here. Because of the question, we're going to be very focused on one particular thing. Someone in the church who appears to be heading toward divorce. We're not going to deal with people who are already divorced. We're not going to deal with people outside of the church. Mm-hmm. There's a huge breadth of biblical teaching on every place a person can be, and there's always a gracious path that God allows us to walk on wherever we are. So in this one circumstance, the advice we give here will not apply to many of these other areas. So why don't you keep that in mind?
What do I do about the divorced people in my church that have been divorced for a while, right? Yeah. It's a lot different question than, I see someone headed towards that direction, what do I do, right?
And the listener is asking about, we see people on this path, what do we do?
Okay. I've got a bit of an Elementrix set up. I don't know, Chad. You've done absolutely no preparation. So if you'd like me to do the heavy lifting and you can help me out.
That's how I feel about all of life, El.
Sounds good. So the Elementrix of what to do about people that are headed toward divorce. Number one, I have don't leap to judgment. Seek to understand what's going on with an open mind and an open heart, because you don't actually know what's going on. The first thing I think you need to understand is that you're listening to a rumor. Chances are they didn't say it to you. Maybe you're even falling into gossip or lies. Mm. You have no idea. Get it from the horse's mouth. Talk to the actual person. Don't leap to judgment that you think you know. Maybe they aren't headed for divorce. Maybe they're headed for counseling. And all you heard was, we're having marriage troubles. We're headed for counseling. But you missed the last part. So don't leap to judgment. Okay? That's number one. Chad, anything you want to say to that?
The only thing I'd add to that would be to expand on it in this way, that generally speaking in the church, we need to be part of the family. If you're talking to your sister or your brother or your mom or your dad or your child, and you think they're doing something that's dangerous, wrong, questionable, how do you approach them and talk to them? Now switch that up. You're in a busy workplace. You're somewhere where you don't know people, and you think you might see something. How do you approach them? It's very different. If you're not involved in the life of the church, you're not involved in people's lives, I would almost go so far as to say, shut up. You have no business getting involved. Get into people's lives first and be a friend first, and then you'll be in a position to work there.
I can't make a judgment for my pew on the other side of the church?
No, and it happens that's judgmentalism. That's what Jesus is talking about when he says, take the speck or take the log out of your own eye before you try and take the speck out of your neighbor's eye. And we don't want to go there. Absolutely. You need to be a part of the community and part of people's lives before you can speak. And that's just a pastoral general perspective. There's going to be unique circumstances, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, second thing I got is don't ostracize the person. Going through a difficult marriage, you're going through a difficult time in your marriage, is not the unforgivable sin. Don't walk up to them and brand them, you know, as someone who is, you know, I'm not going to talk to them anymore. They're a toxic person. Boy, oh boy, that's terrible advice you see online all the time. You know, get rid of the toxic people out of your life, only hang around positive people. Here's a little bit of pastoral truth. Those people don't exist.
If that were true, I wouldn't be hanging around Stephen L.
Oh, well, and that's the thing, is that those positive people who are only positive all the time and have it going, they're all faking, and they do have problems. You just don't know about them. So don't ostracize these poor people by making them, you know, because they're going through a hard time, I don't want to be anywhere near them. That's the opposite of what the Bible says we're supposed to do, right? We're supposed to be loving these people. They're in enough pain without you trying to hurt them.
The whole idea of ostracism, by the way, the ostracan were ancient Greek vases. They would break them up and they would write on them people's names. And when you had the Greek democracies and you had someone who was considered to be guilty of treason, they would write certain names on the ostracan. And if you were on there, so the whole group of traitors would be there, but they'd only write like 1 out of 10 or something on there. I don't know. They had some different systems. And if your name was found on the ostracan, then you lost your citizenship and were thrown out and shunned. That's how it's coming to the English language. And the idea about it was that this is something so serious that it would destroy the community. And there's a little bit something akin to that in church discipline, perhaps. But you would never do that within your family in the general give and take of figuring something out. That whole idea, that whole concept, the way it even came into our language is a very extreme measure for like high treason. You don't do that to your friends.
I thought the ostracan was where large flightless birds go to the bathroom.
The ostrich no. can?
Okay.
Ostracan.
Okay. Third on the Alamatrix.
Third on the Alamatrix is hold the marriage line. Hold the marriage line. In other words, you need to commit that you believe in the value of marriage and the value of commitment. Now, you may look at them and you might think, you know what? They should be free, their lousy spouse. They, you know, I really like that they have this new love interest in their life that seems pretty cool. Or I just hate what that other person's doing to them. You know, they're just such a mess and I can't believe they're dragging them down.
So basically you're saying that you're being informed by watching Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, well, that's it. Like, or every movie, every romantic movie out there where someone finds their soulmate after they get married. Like, it's don't be informed by that. Hold the line of committed, covenantal, biblical marriage, because this isn't about feelings. This is about faith. Just, you know, like, if you're like, well, give you another one. You know, this person's like, you know what? I've been just growing spiritually so much. And my husband or my wife is just not growing at the same speed as me. And, my small group leader is just, I mean, he's a single guy. And he's just so much on my level. And we just connect so much. And I just really feel like God is just calling me away from my pagan, horrible, you know, husband or wife. And I just feel like a real connection to them. Don't you think that I would grow more as a Christian if I divorced my spouse and go with group leader who's it's very tempting. That's a very tempting thought, but it is absolutely not true. You need to hold the line of biblical marriage. Marriage is a picture of Jesus in the church, which is why God says he hates divorce. Divorce, the only reason it even exists in the Bible is Jesus says is because of hard hearts.
Well, yeah.
Right? That, and so it's not anything that God wants from a Christian is to have a heart so hard that reconciliation is impossible.
I think what I would add to that, I like to make sure that we, and I think that we don't in the church today, have a proper, full, positive understanding of what marriage is, and we don't have time to do it here. But we do see it originates in Genesis. Mm-hmm. We do see the Old Testament develop it. Al's already pointed out from Deuteronomy 24 about divorce. The thing that was going on there was that, in this case, women, because it had to do with the culture of the time, were the victims of an abusive system. And so God gave to Moses a means of protecting them legally. And that's, you know, there are going to be issues today where from a pastoral perspective, from a church perspective, there may be someone who's in a vulnerable position. And because of the hardness of the sinner's heart and the vulnerable position that's there, it may be part of the pastoral process that person may actually go through a divorce, and it may be biblical, it may be acceptable but not desirable, and so we need to kind of keep that in mind. It's never a good thing, but sometimes it might be a necessary thing.
All right, let me give you the three biblical grounds for divorce, okay? So this is when you hold the biblical line and you're going to counsel this person, you're talking to this person, whatever, in your mind, you're holding on to the covenant of marriage as paramountly important as a reflection of the relationship of Jesus and his church, and to teach us about what it means to be under Christ and in Christ and his love.
And just to add one more point in there, Al, on just those things, because you're right.
I was on a roll.
Oh, you're doing great. In Malachi chapter 2, there's a discussion about marriage, and there's a very specific thing. I believe, I'm not looking at it, but I think it's around verse 15.
2:16.
16? Okay. Where it's the verse before the one you're thinking of, I think. Where?
No, it's not.
Is it okay? Maybe you're right. Anyway,
I have no idea what you're saying.
What the prophet says is that that you have, there's a covenant to marriage, and it says you've been faithless to the covenant wife of your youth. And that's a huge thing. That's a word for treason. And there's this idea of betraying a covenant, which is really serious. And then the covenant, so that's one structure. The second structure given in is that when you are married, God made you one with this a portion of the Spirit. So there's some sort of divine supernatural union that any person who is married is made one. And that's what Jesus refers to in the New Testament. For what God has made one, let no man separate. So you have this covenant commitment under God. You have a supernatural spiritual union. And you have a purpose. This purpose is given through the Old Testament. But you also have this picture of Christ in the church that Al's already talking about that really elevates it so as into Christian mission. So you have an ethical commitment to covenant. You have a divine supernatural union. Then you have a gospel-oriented, mission-focused picture of the church. And it just elevates, elevates, elevates. Yep. And so when you see this picture of marriage, you think, we don't want to mess with this.
Yep.
Okay, sorry, Al, now go ahead. But now if you are in a position where the other person has broken this so badly, so harshly, there's so much punishment, you don't need to stay in there.
Right. So as an outsider, you're looking at this and how do you, what perspective do you give to this thing? Yeah. Number one is, you know, okay, I'm holding on to marriage. Marriage is important, but God does say because of hard hearts and because of sin in the world, he says, okay, number one, the two or three grounds, there are two or three, depending on who you talk to. number one is sexual immorality.
Zero for some people. Zero, one, two, or three.
Yeah, it's true. So have sex with someone that isn't your spouse is marital unfaithfulness. Now, that means that the covenant is broken and therefore you have the permission to leave. Does that mean you have to? No. Optimally, it would be great if reconciliation were to happen and it would be hard. But at the same time, that is a grounds for divorce. Does that mean porn? Does that mean emotional affairs? This is really hard right now. I'd love to hear Chad's perspective on that because, you know, okay, so this person is completely addicted to porn. And for that matter, they're having an emotional affair with someone. They've moved out of the house. They started living with this other person. They're not sleeping together. They're there 4 or 5 hours a day. This is, you know, and so therefore, does that count even though, you know, they haven't had sex yet? Is that enough for divorce? I really don't know. That's something that I would really struggle with because if the words in the Bible are sexual immorality, which implies, you know, a physical marital intimacy with someone else.
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two is abandonment by an unbeliever, which basically means that the spouse says, get out of my house because you're a Christian. I don't want you in my life anymore.
So Matthew 19 for your first point, 1 Corinthians 7 for your second.
Yeah. But the third one that you'll hear in the evangelical church, which is it doesn't really have a biblical grounds for it, but at the same time, you can kind of finagle the Bible to say it, is emotional or physical abuse or child abuse. God, throughout the Bible, talks about how he hates abusers. He hates people who do violence on those who are weaker. He doesn't expect someone to stay in an abusive situation if they can get out. Abuse is directly opposite to everything marriage is supposed to be. Right?
Yeah.
So it's the opposite of the gospel. It's the opposite of that picture. And so there is no technical biblical grounds that says that you can divorce, but that doesn't mean a long-term separation isn't the right thing.
Yeah.
So Chad, I'd love to hear your perspective on two of those things. One is the emotional affair, and two is the physical abuse.
Yeah. The way I take it in the big picture perspective, I just take it from a little bit different angle in that we're not really looking for specific instances that get us out of the marriage. There's more an idea that we have the good picture of marriage that we want to magnify, but if you are the victim of abuse, you're not required to continue being abused. That's the theology we get out of the Old Testament. Deuteronomy 24, the particular issue there is unique, but I think the principle's broad. Men would, what they would do is they would get a bride price by taking a wife. They would then divorce her in order to marry someone else and get another bride price. And then they would divorce her and go back to the original wife. And what was happening when people were divorced in those days for these problems, they were put in a very vulnerable position of financially, emotionally. So I think this would go into kind of your physical abuse, emotional abuse scenario, that the divorce mechanism of the Old Testament is actually built for explicitly that. When it comes to the New Testament, the debate that then's happening is, what the instruction was that the law was to protect them. The church, in one sense, I mean, the mix in the Old Testament, right, with Israel and the church. So it may be the church for our practical perspective, but the law was to protect those vulnerable women by requiring divorce against the hard-hearted so that they could not then remarry a property done. So they couldn't just throw her out, get the settlement, bring her back, throw her out. They had to make a formal commitment. They had to free release her and they had to provide property for her. So this was a protection mechanism for the women. So I think that we can bring that forward as a principle. So when we get into those, I'm not going to look and say, oh, well, you got yelled at once. That's a good grounds for divorce, or you get yelled at all the time. Yeah. That's a ground. It's going to be more, what's going on? Are you being abused? And then we've got kind of this where the church can step in and help protect them. And that may be be a way to look on the first one.
And you definitely need pastoral counseling. You definitely need counseling. Like this is, you gotta go, you gotta run this up the, run this up the ladder.
Yeah. On the first one, emotional affairs. Yeah. Again, I would say that one is, I think what Jesus is doing in there, the rule that Jesus has, if you want to call it a rule, the ideal that Jesus has, don't get divorced. That's it. But then he's going in and saying, but what do you do when? And he's sort of saying there's going to be times when somebody's going to divorce you, when something bad's going to happen to you, when an affair's going to happen to you. And what Jesus is saying, the covenant's broken. They've already ripped and shredded everything up. In those kind of cases, there's an allowance for moving on with your life. And the reason's the same as Deuteronomy. In Deuteronomy, Moses says, Jesus says of Deuteronomy, it was because of the hardness of your hearts that God did this. In other words, what he's saying is, you're so unrepentant in your sin, you're so unwilling to change, that God had to bring national law to protect the victims of your evil. So it's not like, hey, here's my get out of marriage free card. If I can check this list, it's, wow,
yeah, exactly.
I'm such a bad person. I can't, or the victim is saying, mm-hmm. I'm with someone who's essentially unredeemable.
We're almost out of time, guys, so I want to ask one more question. What worked to help these families through? What are some strategies, things you've seen that actually worked?
I'd say nothing works, but faith. I mean, it's you're going through a very hard time. Divorce is akin to death. There can be all kinds of trauma. The people who come through it best are the people who most strongly, their faith is most firm, and they have a church family, supportive family and friends around them who are with them and nurturing them and helping them along the way. And then they follow the path. We didn't get into this, but there's a path in scripture for after divorce. What do you do? And there's some different paths. And so I think you want to follow those, and that's where you're going to find your health and restoration is going to come.
I got a few practical things you can throw down. Number one, as their friend, realize they're in a weird place. As their church, as their pastor, realize they're in a weird place. So them coming to couples night or singles night or college and career night, like they can't come to only, like all those things are going to be weird. But they still want to be involved. So if they show up, they're going to end up sitting by themselves or they don't know if they're going to be belonging and it's going to feel so strange. So work on inviting them out for meals and out for fun to events that aren't just for couples or just for families or whatever. That will actually reinforce how lonely and how difficult things are. Make things that they can get involved with and maybe go to bring them to your place and administer them privately. That's the first one, is realize they're in a weird place.
Make sure your church has things that I guess that aren't
that would be nice. Oriented those exactly. ways, yeah. And like, don't just gear everything for that one nuclear family, which is...
Mind you, stuff doesn't have to win that. I would say stuff doesn't have to be formal either. That can be people inviting them over to their houses.
Well, that's my point.
That's the church's community.
You know, second, it's super preferable if a bunch of divorced people don't make their own small group. So in other words, if you see this person basically cloistering themselves off into only like-minded individuals that are bitter like them, talk to them. I had this happen in one church where a small group cropped up and it was only divorced women. And I thought, well, that's going to be bad. And I was right. And it basically turned into a man-hating, bitter thing.
Actually, that really is true, though. There's a sense where you can get some support from people who've gone through similar things to you. And in the right circumstances, that can be okay. But boy, I tell you, in this fallen world, we're so much more likely to bring one another down to our shared misery.
Be different.
Yeah. Find someone who's gone through it. You know, find someone who's gone. You know, down the road a little bit.
If someone is healed and all that faith, afterwards, it's different than a totally group that's all in the same crisis point together.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, and then the third one, help them to flee temptation and help hold them accountable. Because if they are going through a difficult marriage or a difficult time, then you know it's going to be hard for them not to do things like starting to see people that find them attractive. And I wonder if this person, should I give them a call? Or pornography, you know, like I'm lonely, therefore I want to go look at porn. They can stumble in all kinds of way. So help them to do things like put blockers on their internet and stay out of clubs or stay out of places where they can start having feelings for people that aren't their spouse. Just help, because it's good counsel to say, you know what, no, you shouldn't go to that club. You shouldn't go to that whatever, because I can hear in your voice, you're going to go see so-and-so, and that relationship is going to get you in trouble. Just yeah. be willing to say that.
That's good. Well, thank you, guys. Any books, anything like that you just want to throw in there that might be good to help around this topic, too?
Yes.
You guys usually have books.
You know what? No, this is a thing that you should talk to your pastor about. I can't think of any books off the top of my head good. That are going to specifically help. You really should sit there and talk to your own pastor, talk to your own your friends, and really get this out in the open. Yeah, there's a bazillion marriage books out there, and they're all going to have different perspectives and stuff. But at this point, when it comes to if your marriage is struggling, you need someone to step in and mediate. You need someone to actually sit there with you and have this conversation. Not just a book that you have to go change yourself. You need to sit there with somebody who can actually talk to you and mediate this conversation and help to explain what the other person is saying. So if you can do that with a friend, you can do that with a couple of elders, you can do that with your pastor.
Yeah.
Just find someone that's a bit more mature that's been down the road a bit so they can help you navigate in mediation. Or for that matter, an actual counselor. You know, find a counselor, a marriage counselor.
To the listener who posted the question, get the book, God Redeeming His Bride by Robert K. Chung. He was one of my professors at Southern. This is an amazing book. Every pastor, every church member should read this. It does have a subtitle about church discipline. Don't let it scare you off, because church discipline is not like the kicking people out of the church weird thing. It's a big, broad discipleship thing. And this is specifically deals with practical strategies for this very topic.
There we go. There's a good book. Thank you, guys.
Yep. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Arroso.
To find out more about Carnivore Theology, get some custom merchandise, download bulletin inserts and posters, or send us some ideas about topics you'd like us to cover, visit our website at www.carnivoretheology.com. For even more Carnivore Theology content, check out our new CT Shorts video series on our YouTube channel. If you like what we're doing, please share us with your church and friends, like us on Facebook, and rate us on iTunes. And, as always, we encourage you to connect with your local biblical church and keep your eyes on the cross.
You're so dark on your one side, Chad.
Yes, I have a dark side and a light side.
You really do.
Let's just do some lighting adjustments.
Oh, man.
Where were you on the 5th of March?
That actually looks better.
That lamp looks like that one that keeps killing the eye in Pixar every episode.
It is. It's that same lamp. I think, actually.
He every once in a while jumps on your head.
Yeah, it's painful.
Welcome to Carnivore Theology, a podcast that covers hot topics.
We need to edit that, because that seems like you do that twice every week.
Welcome to Carnivore Theology. Welcome to Carnivore Theology. No, seriously. Welcome to Carnivore Theology.
This is the intro to my intro.
And this is my then intro. We're gonna intro. Just say, okay, we're behind the scenes. Maybe I'll edit it.
All three of us can do our own intro.
Work on that.
Yeah, okay. We can do our own three at the same time and see who has excellent auditory processing abilities.
We cover
hot topics, current events, and we answer your questions to help you grow from milk to meat.
Not that you people ever submit them anymore. Man, it's been so long since we got a question. Come on.
Actually, people no longer have any questions about theology, Christian living, church and society, sin.
Well, I can only assume that after 97 episodes, we pretty much covered the gamut of all of human existence. No. So,
your divorce rate goes down, which means something. I'm going to let you.
Basically, what Steve is saying is if you are divorced, have had a divorce, or are thinking about a divorce, you're probably not as good a Christian as Steve is.
CBC. No.
Well, it looks like we lost Chad. I think he's standing in his library there, wandering around in circles.
Tell you what, whatever he finds, we will post on the website. Okay. We got to wrap now.
Well, yeah, we got to wrap. We can't wait for Chad to stare at his books. Yeah. Okay, Chad's going to add the last note.
To the listener who posted the question.
For more... even more Carnivore Theology content, check out our CT Shorts video series on our YouTube channel. Chad's shorts are pretty awesome, too.
I know, I thought that, yeah.
Check out Chad's shorts!